Hysteria is brought to you by Quince. Who doesn't love the good things in life? Even though I enjoy a little luxury, it doesn't mean I can always afford it until I discovered Quince. Quince is my go-to for luxury essentials at affordable prices. Quince offers a range of high-quality items at prices within reach, like the 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters from $50, washable silk tops and dresses, organic cotton sweaters, and 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. First, I just have to say, I love my Quince sweaters, but I love the washable silk because I think I look very nice in silk, but I am a woman of a certain age who gets hot flashes, and sometimes you need to be able to wash your silk. And it comes out perfectly, 10 out of 10, no comments. But by partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. So I love my cardigan. I love it so much. It doesn't pill. This is my biggest complaint about most sweaters, especially cashmere. They pill, and you wear them once or twice, and then you have to take them to get fixed, or you just don't wear them anymore. They just look like raggedy, but mine always look fresh from the box, and that is why I love them. So give yourself the luxury you deserve with Quince. Go to quince.com/hysteriapod for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/hysteriapod to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/hysteriapod. Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
And I'm Sammy Sage.
My fave Sammy Sage, co-founder of Betches Media and host of American Fever Dream, is back. Sammy, thank you so much for coming back for So 2 Week.
Oh my God, this is the dream week to be here.
It's, though we know it's not So 2 Week, but joint
whatever,
session week.
You know, right? I can't get with these times. The average American calls it the State of the Union. Where was I in 2016 and 2021 that I had no clue that this is a custom to call it a joint address and not a State of the Union? I swear I was watching.
There was a lot more trauma happening back then.
Okay.
Fine. We were still fresh in it. You know, we were still reeling from what was actually happening. But wait, I have a question for you. Serious but random. Mm-hmm. So far for you, is there anything good that has come from this administration?
I'm pretty good at finding a toxic silver lining.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm asking.
And I would say that this administration and everyone who's associated with it, both externally, internally, has really cured my imposter syndrome, I think, for good. Because they promise us a meritocracy. And I would think, especially with everything we've seen with Ukraine, Trump abandoning Ukraine, the tariffs going disastrously, and the market tanking. Mm-hmm. If I'm in charge of anything and have any form of authority in a business or in the government, I'm going to realize that that's going to go disastrously. And I'm also going to not be that surprised when it happens. And yet, they go along with him as if this wasn't a huge risk the whole time, and as if every economist didn't say that his economic policies were going to tank the economy. And then he did it, and everyone's like, wait, I didn't think he was really going to do it.
Except the Wall Street Journal was like, my God, you really did it?
Right. It's also like you've been observing this man for decades, and if you're not able to identify these patterns, then you're not really good at assessing risk, and maybe you shouldn't be in charge of major companies. Just my thoughts.
You know what? Sammy, may this be our gift to listeners today. Look around you and put the imposter syndrome in a closet. There is someone running the Department of Defense who literally is one of the least qualified people. So you and I feeling good about ourselves at least today, knowing we deserve to be sitting behind these podiums. That's how we feel today.
You know, I'm not even going to go that far because okay. I don't want to rank myself against all the other people who are not there. But okay. I'm feeling pretty bad about them.
All right, that's good. That, you know what? It's always a more gentle place to be. I just feel bad about them.
Yeah, I feel bad about them. And I can feel I can offer a solution or ideas for solutions. but someone else is going to have to take care of those because we can't do everything around here, Alyssa.
No, we can't. Today, Sammy and I dig into Trump's joint address to Congress and his weird fetish for tragedy porn, the Democratic response, and Kate Hudson's new Netflix show, Running Point. Just another day here at Hysteria. Then I'm joined by Elisa Lane, a Maryland farmer impacted by Trump's federal spending freeze. Buckle up. Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast who will, well, actually you if you called Trump's joint address to Congress on Tuesday a State of the Union.
We just did that organically.
I know. That's why it was so funny.
Yeah. Well, actually, we learn more about civics every day now that it's too late.
Well, Sammy, you and I, we were on text with Caroline and Claire. It was a late night for us East Coasters, mostly because trauma doesn't settle easy when you want to go to bed. Trump's joint address to Congress was last night. It was Trump's first major presidential speech since returning to power. And it was long, like long, long, like two episodes of White Lotus and a pee break in between kind of long. Trump, you know what's so interesting? When we were in the White House, I remember all the conversations, Pfeiffer, Robert Gibbs, the press secretary, like, this speech has to be tight. The networks will go batshit if it goes to 10:05. And there was always the lore of Clinton's speech held up. You know, I think Clinton went 1:14 one year. You know, he went an hour and 14 or something like that one year. And it was like, it can't happen. So last night was long. Trump spent 100 minutes of speechifying. He contradicted himself. He made endless false claims about border crossings, inflation, the economy, boasted about his executive orders, and relentlessly attacked Democrats and anyone opposed to his agenda. Before we get into the details, early on in his address, Trump asserted that he has a mandate like has not been seen in many decades. And I know you and I just felt a need to remind listeners, while the vibe out there might feel like Trump won a landslide, that is not reality. He won the popular vote by 1.48%. Biden won it in 2020 by 4.45, and Obama in 2008 by 7.27. So let's set the stage with that, because if we're following the will of the people, they elected him, they did, but it was not a coronation.
Yeah, of course not. I mean, let's just go back to the length of the speech. Mm-hmm. For 100 minutes, I think that we actually got lucky. Because if you remember on the campaign trail about a week before the election, he spent 39 minutes or so just standing on stage listening to Pavarotti.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, I think we could have had that. And then what would we have done? So, you know, it could have been, he's done worse. And I think that that's what we have to remember. And then in terms of his mandate, the thing is that we're just in such information silos that, okay, people in this listening here will hear this and understand that. But does the word mandate even mean anything to people? And does it even matter in terms of what he's going to do?
He won.
Even if he didn't win, he lost the popular vote is what I mean. He is still there and we're dealing with what he's doing. And he's you know,
doing
a bunch of things, one might say.
So many things. So, Sammy, this morning,
a very productive administration. Just say that.
So, well, no, let's parse that a little bit, right? Is it productive or is it just chaotic?
It is productively destructive.
Okay. That's fair. Wow.
And I think we have to reassess in our minds what the goals of the administration are. Because I'm hearing, oh, he destroyed the economy. He's going to do all this. He's going to screw up our relationships. I think it's time that we consider that maybe he might have different goals than we project onto the person occupying the American presidency.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you think about it from that perspective, you're like, oh, I see why he can't do that. And how could he do this are kind of reactions that just keep your wheel spinning.
Right. It was kind of like last week when Zelensky, it was just days ago, actually, when Zelensky was in the Oval Office and people were just like tweaking out online. They're like, you know, Zelensky came in. I mean, people who are kind of like, I don't even know. I mean, they're people I know and I like them, but they were saying crazy things. They're like, well, Zelensky, like he really should have known. He should have just kind of gone in on bended knee and he should have gotten this signed and whatever. And that's what foreign leaders should do. And when you need something, I was like, is everyone forgetting that Benjamin Netanyahu actually endorsed Mitt Romney for president in 2012 when Barack Obama was president? And we didn't shut down Iron Dome. It's like sometimes you just cannot be such a petty bitch.
Yeah. Memories are short.
Short. So wait, tell me, what'd you think? Where was your brain going last night when you were watching this speech?
Not to perpetuate the idea that women are more emotional at certain points of their cycle, mm-hmm. but I am on the second day of my period, and so okay. all my feelings are filtered through that feeling of frustration.
Despair?
No.
Okay. I get a lot of despair 2 days before.
That was 2 days before. Now I'm two days in.
Right.
So frustration and just irritation at the situation. And I find myself frustrated that the Democrats don't know how to redirect the conversation and give us something else to talk about other than this not very newsmaking speech.
Right.
There wasn't really much in there that was
there was
new.
No real news. Like there was
not
no
really.
Policy. It was the equivalent of a stump speech in the last couple of weeks before an election. It was a rally speech.
Combined with kind of a talk show vibe, you get to go to college.
You get to not have your AI porn so bad.
This is what's so disappointing. If people had just kind of let him into this New York culture and let him have a show and got to talk about the Phantom of the Opera and read his column every week. He could have just done that. That was really what he wanted.
He might have been happier.
His dad would have never accepted it.
Well, his dad's
so much trauma playing out.
Dad's not here to see him be president, so I don't know what good it's doing anybody.
Well.
What stood out to you?
The rowdiness of the environment and the cult-like nature of the clapping around some of it, the emotional performance of it, the bleak descriptions of sort of sexual violence and violence in general on multiple occasions in a way that feels insane to me.
Yeah.
You know, like when he was talking about the woman with the fake AI porn and do you know how many people are going to go Google that now? Like, why are we talking about this?
I thought the same thing.
Come on. Like, it also stood out to me the way that JD and Mike Johnson were behind him. So there was this vibe of like, go, 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 go.
It was I would say for the first time since I remember and I've been watching joint sessions, since I was a baby. I never remember it feeling so unserious. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was malevolent. Like, it was dangerous. There was bad things happening, but it didn't feel like it was being delivered in a remotely serious way. I mean, like J.D. Vance was smirking the entire time. And it actually, one of my takeaways from last night, he's too immature to be vice president. Like, it's just, come on. Like, are we really going to, give me a break? I'm glad he wrote a book. I'm glad he got into the Senate. But he was like a full-on frat bro sitting behind Trump last night. And Mike Johnson, God bless that Keebler elf, he was just there, you know, nodding his head. He knew he had to. The thing that I forgive both of them a smidge, I guess, is that you know Donald Trump went back home, rewatched the entire State of the Union to see who responded as enthusiastically as he feels they should have.
For everyone in the chamber.
Yeah.
He probably watched it on all the different channels.
Yeah. Be like, who are they focusing in on? Looking at Democrats, being like, huh, maybe I got a chance with that one.
Probably. Yeah, it's Mojo Dojo Casa Congress. That's what's happening. And yes, J.D. Vance, it's not just that he's too immature because of last night. It's because he cannot go to Europe or even stay home without antagonizing the whole continent.
It's true. And Sammy, the reason that he does that and antagonizes, this is the immaturity part. The reason he does it and goes out and tries to antagonize everybody is because he wants to outshine Elon Musk. So
yes,
it is a competition. Like last night, he's like, I'm up here, Elon's down there. When he's in Europe, he's like, I'm here, Elon's there. When he was in the Oval Office with Zelensky, he was like, I am the eldest boy.
Right. Well, Jeremy Strong famously doesn't.
That's right.
You know, but either way, I think that that's true, understandably. But if, you know, he had the confidence to understand that he's actually number two, although what is it? None of this is real. It's all
bullshit.
Yeah. It's all bullshit.
Is there anything, I was surprised by a couple things they didn't talk about. Did you notice
anything? The whole economy?
Yeah, there was one.
Just the whole economy, inflation, prices of anything, groceries, his favorite word, groceries. didn't talk about the price of groceries. He didn't talk about...
No repro rights, no abortion.
Right, of course. But he did...
I mean...
None of that. Not much on Israel.
No, he avoided that hot potato. What did he say? It's a dangerous neighborhood over there. Like, there is a ceasefire expiring and in jeopardy, and he said nary a word.
Nope. No, nothing. I will give him that I did laugh at several points where
Which
he was
one?
Like, I don't remember. Like, not with him, but...
At him.
Just at the, I can't believe it's real kind of thing.
Well, like when he just started...
Mexico, Canada, ever heard of those?
He just starts randomly listing things. And you could also tell when he was going off script.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then you'd be like, okay, it's about to get good. What's he going to say that he really thinks? But the other thing that I thought was so interesting, when he was going through... Now, when most presidents deliver a major speech, they do prep. They read the speech in front of the prompter. They read it at different speeds. They try to see what kind of audience. They see where they should pause, right, for applause and that kind of stuff. I'd say straight up 25% of that speech, he read like he was hearing it all for the first time.
Oh, I believe it. You think he read the 90-minute speech? Like he read all those pages?
No, especially at the font, that level that he was using. But like, what was the one... where they were talking about aid to an African nation and...
Something about Mozambique.
There was Mozambique and then there was Lesotho. Did I say that? I don't even know if I said that right.
Uganda.
Right. And there was Uganda. And he was just like, and another. And we were like, oh my God. He said, oh, the Lesotho. He said, who's ever heard of that? And it's like, I could actually spell it. I just can't say it right now. But like, we know it's there.
Anyone who plays Sporkle Countries of the World. Me, knows that Lesotho is a country.
Lesotho, yeah. Thank you.
There was another part where that was clearly ad-libbed. I don't think someone wrote this into the speech. Pocahontas likes that one.
That was my biggest what the fuck moment. And like, God bless her. She took it like a champ. But the president of the United States of America called a sitting senator Pocahontas.
In the State of the Union.
I'm only laughing because she took it like a champ, but it's among the most despicable things that you can really
it's
kind of
so
think
despicable.
Of. It's about
you have
as
to
offensive.
Laugh at it. You have to laugh at it still.
You have to laugh at it because he's learned zero lessons in 15 years. It's like just don't
he
call.
Has learned the lesson that this works because he keeps getting rewarded and he's here and he's basically completing a takeover of the federal government. So yes, he's learned a lot. He's learned that
Remember,
this works.
What did he yell at her, Pocahontas, about? Oh, he was talking about Ukraine. And he said, made some reference. He said, well, we could keep the war going for another 5 years. I bet you'd like that, Pocahontas. Like, what?
Like, it's, okay, it's what SNL would have parodied
yes.
his State of the Union.
We have to assume Kate McKinnon's,
ago.
We got to assume Kate McKinnon may be coming back this Saturday.
I hope. But how do you parody it?
I don't know.
It's beyond.
It's just use. It's just use.
Calling out to Elizabeth Warren in the middle of the speech spontaneously. Come on.
And I mean,
do you think he planned that? I don't think he did.
So this leads me to another question. Democrats. Let's talk about Democrats. Mm-hmm. So, Sammy, what did you think of the Democratic response before, during, after the speech? I feel like you have thoughts on this. I feel if you have a rant in you, like, by all means.
I have a lot in me on this. Mm-hmm. I will say that it's disappointing.
Okay.
Quite disappointing. I'm going to try to moderate my language, but they fucking failed.
Okay.
I don't understand the instruction from Hakeem Jeffries to sit quietly and, you know, that they should, like, be respectful and pretend this is normal. Here's what I would have done.
Okay.
Because this was scheduled quite a bit in advance, and because this man has been in public life for decades, it's fairly obvious how it could go, a few scenarios. And you can use that knowledge. Again, this goes back to my imposter syndrome. You can use that knowledge to plan what you're going to do. Now, the question is, do you go or do you not go? That's obviously the first question. Or do you do a mix of that? Now, you have to... You can't just have it be empty because
you can't see that space. Yes.
Yeah, you can't see that space. And AOC said that they were trying to take their seats anyway. So if you decide we don't go, we're all not going, you don't just like not show up and whine on Twitter. What I would have done,
okay,
I would have filled all of those seats with fired federal workers. And I would have had them hold up on a piece of whiteboard or something, 5 bullet points about what they do for the federal government.
Whoa.
Things that are very salient, things that are very important, things that people understand benefit their lives. And I would have them hold those up, maybe even in front of their faces if they're worried about, like, about retaliation or whatever, that they'd say they're crisis actors, but whatever. Make either fill the room with something meaningful or you... show up for either you're strategic about who will show up and who won't show up. I mean, I don't think they would have ever done something as daring as like fill the room with fired federal workers, though.
Well, legally, I don't think they could have.
Why?
Because it's the chamber. It's the chamber.
Or
and you've
what?
Gotta, listen, you want to hear my answer? You just want to keep for what in me. So they have to get in.
Erica Jane.
They have to get in through security, right? So these people would need a ticket. They would need a seat to get in there. And those are members' seats. So I do not know. I am just saying it is possible. I do not know that that is an actionable possibility for a member to give their floor seat to someone who is not a member.
Okay, so if they're going to kick them out, then...
They could have been up in the gallery, though.
Okay, sure. But let's say they... tried to bring them down there, make a spectacle. Like the Al Green thing, all he did was scream, you don't have a mandate to take away Medicaid, I believe.
Right.
And that moment stuck out enough that it's a talking point today. So because they never would have done something daring, like filling the room in a certain particular way, they needed to take a targeted approach.
Okay.
And I don't think they understand. I don't think they're self-aware enough as a caucus to understand like who's good at what and who should be doing what. But they should have thought in it. This is why the time in advance is so critical. They should be thinking about who is going to do what. So you had a few people who actually, I think, executed this on their own. AOC was like, I'm not going. I'm going to talk on Blue Sky.
Right.
And be interacting. And then I'm going to go on Instagram Live immediately after. Okay. That's like an effective.
Right.
An effective choice.
That's her. That is a personally effective choice.
Right. Eric Swalwell brought the creator from The Good Liars. So you're and to have him fact check. So, okay, you bring in like a new media person. That's pretty smart, in my opinion. They have a really big audience. So you have a strategy around what you're going to do.
Right.
Jasmine Crockett did TikToks. Like, she did like TikTok before she went, and then she didn't wear fucking pink, which
we can talk about that another time.
Jasmine was bringing people along with her, where she went and then she walked out and she went on live immediately. Maxwell Frost had an outfit where he, first of all, I don't think "No Kings Live Here" is like a great slogan, but the point is he tried.
Right.
A for effort. B- for execution. Right. And he was on Instagram. He was doing, like, he appeared on cable. Like, he was hustling. So there are members who I think had, like, a plan. If you're just going to sit there with the dumb fucking bingo paddle, then just figure something else out. If you don't have something, then rethink your seat.
That's so I agree with you almost across the board. Okay, cool, quick question. Sammy Sage represents the great state of New York, New York's whatever district. You're there yesterday. You have a choice. Do you go? Do you not go?
It kind of depends, like, what relationship I've built with my constituency, like the exact approach I took. But I would probably do, like, a Jasmine Crockett-esque approach in terms of, like, taking people along with me, where with whatever my choice is, and just kind of playing out the day. And if I go, I go. If I don't go, I don't go.
Okay.
And covering it on my socials. Like, I would still be covering it even if I wasn't in
going.
There.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But I just
And if I were going, I would have, you know, I assume if I'm in Congress, I have, like, a cause and I have a thing that I do or I talk about.
Right.
When he inevitably lies about that thing or whatever it is, if that were my area, I would get myself kicked out over that thing. And then I would go on all the cable channels, including Fox, and I would talk about why I screamed about the thing that he lied about, and I would, like, make a thing out of it.
I love that for you. See, this is where—
Thank you.
This is what, one, I feel like I always learn so much from you because I'm like—
I learn more from you, like, that you can't just go into the seats.
Well, look, we all need guardrails, right? I'm just a guardrail kind of gal. But, yeah. Like, there is a— I love that there is an age difference between the two of us that allows me, but also a deep friendship that allows me to be like, I 100% would have sat in my seat like Elizabeth Warren. I would have done social media too. But you know what I thought they were missing was, like, the paddles, again, like an idea with bad execution. Like, what I would have done, there are certain things that you know that he was going to talk about, right? And so— I don't know. This may be super cheesy, but I think I would have done something that would have been understated, but would have thrown him off his game. So he loves his flow, right? So when he's talking about Ukraine, I would have said to everyone, the minute he mentions Ukraine, you count back from 10 and everyone says Slava Ukraini. Like, he would have been so confused if that happened. And I think that there were, like, moments that, like, because also, even as someone who physically was watching it, I couldn't tell what the paddles said. They weren't big enough. And they didn't all say the same thing. And some of them had fronts and backs that said different things.
Save Medicaid.
It was—
We love veterans. You're lying. False.
It was, and also, like, the you know, this is my favorite, and it's been a topic of all the town hall conversations that people have been having. If they wanted to make one effort that everyone could get behind, I would have gotten t-shirts made that they all should have worn respectfully under their suits that say 1 in 3 federal workers is a veteran.
That's not a bad message.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Sammy.
That's a good one to pick. Like, they had to be more— I mean, look, they had the veteran paddle. What, to your point about throwing him off his game, that's exactly the need to be agile.
Right.
The need to, like, do something that's creative. I'm so sick of the lack of creativity. If instead of the paddles, what they should have done was had whiteboards that they can write on, and that way things could have been, like, funny and you could have had iconic, memeable images, because, like, the person who held up the "this is not normal" sign.
Yeah.
I've heard people talk about that. I've seen that. She got it torn out of her—
Yeah.
Her hand, but that was more conversation. So the ability to be flexible and creative and funny and, like, to steal the narrative. Nothing they did steals the narrative, because even though AOC did well and Jasmine Crockett did well and
yeah.
whatever, that's not the Democrats, because they're just not united. And I think part of it is that they don't have a North Star to be promising. They're just still fighting the last battle, defending the institutions, which is why part of my strategy is that Elizabeth Warren, our policy maven— there was a New York Times piece that was like, Democrats need a Project 2029. She's got a few plans in the drawer, yeah, I'm sure.
Totally.
Why doesn't she start working on what the future policy planks could be, potential options, and give something, like, someone needs to be working on what that is. And there needs to be people who actually are competent enough to do it and right, not taken by corporate donations. So let's get going. Bernie's running around the country on his oligarchy tour. That's another thing. I think a lot of the representatives could have been, should be doing that. Why are we leaving it to an 83-year-old man to hoof it around the country?
Well, it's, yeah. See, I was going to say there's a lot of, like, and again, it's like, I don't really know the DNC's role in anything or, like, if they're spearheading any of this. But in theory, I would love to see Klobuchar, Gillibrand, bunch of the bad bitches on a bus going around being like, and, like, the women, I want the women who can explain, Elizabeth Warren, who can explain things on a turn, who are like, no, this is how it works, and this is why this is bad, and this is why this is a lie, and you as a farmer are going to get screwed. And I think that that would be good. But, like, in terms of big moments, like the State of the Union, they really, okay, I'm going to take us back to 1980. Okay.
I wasn't even alive.
I'm sure you weren't, you chucklehead. I was in the 4-year-olds at my nursery school, Freedom
You
Plains.
Were barely alive either. Come on.
I had somehow heard that it was my nursery school teacher's birthday, and I brought everybody into the Windy House, and I was like, you're in charge of cupcakes, you're in charge of potato chips, you're in charge of, like, cray paper and balloons and all this stuff. I was 4. It's an epic story because the world has changed a lot. And so today, that kind of like ingenuity and drive would be celebrated. I unfortunately was found out, in air quotes, and the teachers made me stand at the front door, which was a little Dutch door, so it was like 2 doors. And I had to say, I'm very sorry for telling a tale. I'm very sorry for telling a tale.
What tale did you tell?
Well, that was the crazy part. It actually was her birthday. So no real lessons learned. Other than sometimes you have to take coordination into your own hands. And on a night like State of the Union, I would hope that the Democrats would be like, Jasmine, AOC, get us all in a room. Tell us what to do. Just tell us what to do. We'll do whatever you tell us to do. Tell us what to do. And we're still missing that. Like, we're missing people. What my old boss, David Plouffe, used to say is that we all have our highest, best use. The thing that we are uniquely qualified for, right?
And yes, I'm with that.
Right? And, like, let's be real about who is uniquely qualified for what. I don't need Sheldon Whitehouse on TikTok. Right? But he could be sitting in the audience with a t-shirt on that says 1 in 3 federal employees is a veteran.
Here's the thing. Sheldon Whitehouse is very good at explaining and very knowledgeable. So he should be probably helping Liz Warren come up with an anti-corruption platform. I think that would be a good use of time for Sheldon Whitehouse.
Yeah, I agree
with
that.
Some of them have to be serious. Some of them have to be... They can't all be doing a Kendrick Lamar TikTok. And that doesn't mean that you don't have a really important role, but someone has to be doing the legwork on policies and messaging. And Sheldon Whitehouse also can go out to his constituency and test what do people respond to? What do moderates respond to? What do people who are, you know, people who are disenchanted Trump voters respond to? So everyone needs to, like, yes, highest, best use. Is there anyone who can organize this around?
Sammy, I feel like we might have to.
I don't. I'm not like that. I have good ideas.
We're not.
But you know organized.
What? We're going to talk offline about who we can put in charge of our great ideas. And we're also going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Hysteria is brought to you by Fatty 15. Guys, have you noticed you're getting older? It doesn't matter how old you are. You're always getting older. If you're lucky, it's a good thing, right? We're glad we're getting older. But getting older comes with some aches, some pains. Maybe you're not sleeping as well. Maybe your gut's not as, you know, motile as it used to be, which is why I'm excited to share with you guys C15 from Fatty 15, the first essential fatty acid to be discovered in more than 90 years. It's an incredible scientific breakthrough to support our long-term health and wellness, and you guessed it, aging and longevity. Fatty 15 co-founder Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson discovered the benefits of C15 while working with the U.S. Navy to continually improve the health and welfare of aging dolphins. I am so into that. Based on over 100 studies, we now know that C15 strengthens our cells and is a key longevity-enhancing nutrient, which helps to slow biological aging at the cellular level. In fact, when our cells don't have enough C15, they become fragile and they age faster. And when our cells age, our bodies age too. This eventually led to studies finding the first new nutritional deficiency in 75 years called cellular fragility syndrome, caused by a lack of essential fatty acid, C15. As many as 1 in 3 people worldwide may have low C15 levels and cellular fragility syndrome. Do you? I'm going to find out. To help fix cellular fragility syndrome and further extend our health and longevity, a team of doctors working in collaboration with the U.S. Navy spent over a decade to develop the pure, optimized, and bioavailable C15-0 ingredient in Fatty 15. Thankfully, Fatty 15 repairs age-related damage to cells, protects them from future breakdown, and activates pathways in the body that help regulate our sleep, mood, and natural repair mechanisms that support our overall health. This functionality leads to so many other exciting benefits now and as we get older. In fact, 72% of Fatty 15 customers report seeing or feeling benefits within 16 weeks, including improved metabolic, liver, and heart health, smoother functioning joints, deeper sleep, healthier hair, skin, and nails. Now that's essential. Fatty 15 is a science-backed, award-winning, vegan, patented, 100% pure C15 supplement. It's vegan-friendly, free of flavors, fillers, allergens, or preservatives. Fatty 15 has 3 times more cellular benefits than omega-3 or fish oil. By replenishing our cells with the essential C15 nutrient, Fatty 15 effectively repairs cells and restores our long-term health. Fatty 15 is clinically proven to raise C15-0 levels, resulting in lower cholesterol levels, healthier liver function, improved gut microbiome health, and improved red blood cell health within 3 weeks. So for me, everyone who listens to the show knows that I have a sensitive stomach, and I will definitely say that I have improved my gut biome. I can tell, and I'm grateful for it. Also, I just feel like everything just looks a little shinier. I don't mean my face, but like my hair is a little shinier. My nails are growing. Everything just feels like it's doing what it should be doing. And so I'm really grateful for that. Best of all, Fatty 15 comes in a gorgeous reusable glass bamboo jar and refills are shipped right to your door. Fatty 15's on a mission to optimize your C15 levels to help you live healthier longer. You can get an additional 15% off their 90-day subscription starter kit by going to fatty15.com/hysteria and using code hysteria at checkout.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast that puts the joint in joint address for Congress, which is what I needed to watch to stay calm and not punch a wall in blind rage.
I'm joining you in that sentiment.
So here's another part of every joint address, State of the Union, the box. Who gets to be in the box, the First Lady's box? Do you know the history of the box, Sammy?
No. Is it happy?
It's feel good.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll take it.
Okay. So the tradition of inviting guests to the First Lady's box began in 1982 when Florida Air Flight 90 crashed into the icy Potomac. A federal worker, Lenny Skutnik, who worked at the Office of Management and Budget, jumped into the Potomac to save a drowning woman who had come out of the crashed flight. And as a thank you for his heroism, President Reagan invited him to watch the State of the Union from Mrs. Reagan's box.
That is very nice. I think that it's notable that it was the Reagans who started it. And I want to point to some of that messaging creativity that we are so desperately in need of. Because at the time, although this is a feel-good moment, and it has somewhat descended into a bit of a trolling move.
Right.
Kinda.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
They were smart, I guess, in 1982. They were not... you know, they weren't, you know, just 2 years after you tried to organize your teacher's birthday party and were reprimanded for it. At that time, it was a simpler America. So I'm sure most people didn't think that he was exploiting this person.
Right. No, he was honoring him. He was an actual hero, right? It was like wonderful. So Melania, First Lady Trump, had quite a few guests with her. We could go through them all, but really, are there just some that stood out to you or how Trump used them stood out to you?
The thing that strikes me about these is that there's something a little fetishistic about all of it. Mm-hmm. And these are all sort of deeply personal tragedies. And they all had a very clearly political angle. Mm-hmm. Something about them, and maybe it's just the way he spoke about some of these people, felt very fetishistic. And like, he never sounds less humane to me than when he's talking about how someone was violently murdered or died. They died like a dog.
Right.
And, like, just the way he speaks about tragedy and human life is so callous that's what these all sort of bring up for me.
These, for me, all felt very spectacle. Like, he kind of made a spectacle of each of these people. And instead of honoring them, there was, like, a sort of circus-like quality to this whole segment of his speech, where he was, like, almost channeling Oprah. Like, you had a tragedy, and I'm going to give you something. Yeah. You had a tragedy, and I'm going to give you something. Like, there was a young woman who had been killed, Jocelyn Nungare. She'd been killed by two Venezuelan nationals who were released by immigration authorities. Okay, we get it, right? But Trump renamed a wildlife sanctuary in her honor, which is lovely. Like, I have no issue with that. But I do think that there was also, in the ways that he was honoring people, just a real through line of hypocrisy. Because it's like, okay, you're renaming a wildlife sanctuary in her daughter's name, but you're, like, firing all the national park workers. And there's this adorable 13-year-old boy who's, like, battling brain cancer, whose dreams to be a police officer, and you make him an honorary Secret Service officer, which is lovely. That is lovely. But at the same time, weeks ago, you released all of the Jan 6 rioters who had assaulted cops. So in so many of these, there felt like such a through line of hypocrisy.
Yes, it's the hypocrisy, but I think what creates the spectacle is this sense of tragedy porn.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm glad you brought up the origin of this, because now I'm kind of recalling other people who have been brought in the past. Usually they're brought for some act of heroism that they themselves have committed. You're holding up some exemplary form of character or sacrifice. Or their child died in battle or something like that.
Right.
It's not usually like someone who just had something very terrible happen to them that Trump happens to think is a salient political talking point. And so he's going to bring them to, like, make a point.
Right. And then after the speech, Sammy, we have the Democratic response. I was really pleased to see that Chuck Schumer picked Senator Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan. What did you think of her response?
She was the right pick for what this traditionally is, for the vibe of what this traditionally is. in terms of what I think putting forth to the types of people who are watching this, mm-hmm. who are going to be watching the Democratic response. I think she was the right person for that, for the formal response. Do I think this should have been the Democratic response in general to the State of the Union?
Right.
Like, should this have been the just gestalt response? No. But her, and I think she said good words. Mm-hmm. She cleared the bar of not being mocked.
Right.
Which is important.
Very.
Which is important for the Democrats
Very.
Right now.
Recall to us Katie Britt last year.
Yes, and the Democrats are in no position to be knocked down another.
We have no room, no room to go. There's no,
yeah, no room to go.
No room to go.
So she definitely cleared the bar. Could it have been more vibrant? I don't know. Maybe vibrant's not the right word. Maybe like
dynamic.
I just want to feel something.
Well, you know, I felt like there were a couple of, there was a little low hanging fruit. Like, could she have been, like, we talk about eggs. I don't know. Could she have been at a chicken farm with farm workers? Like, could she, you know what I'm saying? Like, do something a little that you can control that's not going to be go haywire on you, but something that illustrates one of the many problems he didn't even talk about.
Right. This lack of creativity is, but then I'm like, she isn't that person who should be doing a performance, and unless the Democrats have a message and a policy and they're going to offer something,
right?
Does it even work to try to pull a stunt if you get the wrong person to do the wrong stunt and it's not thought through? So I thought that it was fine.
Right.
For she played her role.
Right.
You know, everyone has their highest, best thing. She did that thing for herself. I don't think that, I think, like, under these conditions, sure, I'll take
Under these conditions, look, if the point of a response is just do no harm, mission accomplished.
Yes.
10 times over.
And her organizing points,
yes,
I thought were smart. Like, if you don't see the organization that you need around you, I thought that that was really, like, telling people to start it. I thought that was really smart and interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's not usually the type of commentary that you're going to get during that. I think her background as a CIA officer gave her a lot of credibility and seriousness, which is, like, why I think the way she delivered it worked. Just to have substance, 4 out of 5.
Right.
Great. Right. And talking about, like, how these things, how things crump. She's seen an a country crumble and a company,
right.
I'm sure. And I think that that all worked. So for the people who watched it, yes. For
right.
the broader public, you know, more work to do.
All right. And one
what about you?
I think that she's a great new generational, like, senator. And I was glad that they picked her. I think she could run for president someday. Like, I think that she...
What's the environment in which she does that?
Not this one.
Right.
I just mean in terms of a person who is thoughtful, who listens, who has beliefs but is not entrenched in them, and therefore is an open-minded person who could build a broad coalition. She is someone who I've always kind of thought about. And she also has, like, a pretty rich backstory. I mean, she started in the Pentagon. Like, you know, she's seen a lot of things. She's seen a lot more than the 24-year-olds from DOGE that are
big balls.
They're just taking a machete and slashing things and then realizing they need to go get a solder to put those wires back together. You know,
Did you see the most heartbreaking video of someone, fired federal worker who showed up at a town, you know, I guess it was like a town hall or a representative's meeting, saying that these 19, 20, 21-year-olds were making federal workers justify their job's existence, like, just stand up in front of them and, like,
yeah,
explain themselves to, like, these people who just graduated college.
And who have no idea what any of the words these people would say would even mean.
Totally. I don't know.
Let's do a little kind of hopeful news, a little bit.
Okay, let's do it.
I'm obsessed with the Resistance Rangers. Do you know who the Resistance Rangers are?
Yes, but tell me more about them.
Okay. So over the past couple of weeks, the Trump administration has fired over 1,000 national park employees. Over the past weekend, a group called the Resistance Rangers organized 145 protests at parks all across the country to stand up against both the job cuts and the broader threats to public lands. From the Grand Canyon to Acadia in Maine, they held signs and chanted, "Public lands are not for sale," and "Down with Doge," bringing awareness to the future of parks that may become targets for resource extraction. And here is just like in a how far we have come in a bad way. National parks were established by Republican Ulysses S. Grant.
Wasn't that when the Republicans were different, though?
They were different. They were different. But in 1872, he signed legislation establishing Yellowstone, encompassing 2.2 million acres as the nation's first national park. Funny enough, when you go deep into the internet, you find out some other things, like that Ulysses S. Grant also instituted civil service reform in the executive branch to reduce the negative effects of patronage and the spoil system.
So you see where there's an ideological mismatch between Ulysses S. Grant and the people in charge now. Here's the thing. I think this is like a great example of a creative, interesting form of resistance that, when Michelle Obama, or really many people, have said, there's no one coming to save you. You have to do it. Mm-hmm. If this kind of thing isn't happening everywhere all the time, nothing will change.
Yes.
And it's just going to become more consolidated. Like, this is all the minimum. But I love that there are creative, interesting ideas that actually move people. Like, I've had people say to me that the park rangers are like the thing that is most set them over the edge in terms of like the fire federal
workers.
Yes,
these people do not make a lot of money. They keep our, like, when you think about what the parks represent to this country, they are a place largely free where you can go, or for a minimal fee, and take your family for a whole day. You can go camping, you can get air, you can get nature and beauty. And it's like, why must you tinker with this of all things? Why must you contaminate, pollute, try to touch this? Just let the parks be.
I know why. Because
drill, baby, drill.
People who, I doubt they're even going to use them all to like drill or extract for resources. It's that these people who are in charge, what do they care about a national park? What do they care about a vacation that's not on a yacht?
It's true.
Where they're being personally catered to. They can't imagine that these are useful to people, that these mean something, that people have, that people actually care about something as simple as the beauty of a tree and the changing of the seasons. Like, they're so soulless that they do not understand that this isn't just like a bunch of trees for people. This
right.
is something.
It's life. It's how they connect. It's how people unwind. It's how they find their meaning. And it's also such a radical departure from, you know, in the Obama administration, we went on a national parks trip every year.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I almost died in the Grand Canyon because it was too hot for me. We went to Yellowstone. That's when Lovett dressed like a park ranger, for real. Love him. Went to Yellowstone. We went to the Grand Canyon. We went to Acadia National Park in Maine. That was probably my favorite because it was temperature appropriate for someone like me.
Right.
Maine in July is just, it's a light jacket at night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
All of those things, they were just so special. And to see people enjoying them so much, it's just, I'm glad for the park rangers. I support them. I've signed any petition sent my way. And also, you know, Sammy, one thing that we just to backtrack for 2 seconds, potential government shutdown March 14th. No talk of that in the State of the Union.
Oh, that would have been a good thing for someone to bring up.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. I'm sort of two minds about this because of something you said. Well, not only, but largely because of something you said that I agree with last week, which is the shutdown could be a pretense to just to permanently reduce the government. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're playing with a big risk if they don't think about it that way.
Right.
And try to shut the government down because it seems like what they should do, kind of, as a act of resistance. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that is going to be what they want, given the threshold that this administration has for just never bringing any of those people back.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. Well,
so I'm not hyped on the government shutdown for that reason. You know, I'm not.
I'm not hyped on it. I just thought it was strange was no mention of it, or that the State of the Union wasn't used in any way. I know I'm so retro. That the State of the Union wasn't used in any way to find a little smidgey of common ground that might help avert a government shutdown.
This is 10 days from now.
I know. So it's a lifetime.
We could be out of NATO.
We could
be at war with Canada. Like, I don't know. Give it a week.
The Canadians won't go to war with us. They'll just look so disappointed at us.
Oh, you know, I'm Canadian.
Are you?
I'm technically Canadian. Yeah, my dad was born in Toronto because his parents were refugees after Auschwitz. So they were trying to get in here. So he was born in Toronto. He was a naturalized citizen. Okay. And yeah. And I have a passport. I'm Canadian.
Well, okay. Well, lucky you. You better have room in your suitcase for me.
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm so nice.
We're going to be right back with an interview with a USDA farmer impacted by Trump's policies. Hysteria is brought to you by Mosh. The older I get, the more I find myself wanting to be more intentional about the way I live, eat, and take care of my body. The old adage, you are what you eat, rings very true to all of us in the modern day, and I'm always looking for an on-the-go protein snack that satisfies me, but now I found one that helps me live intentionally too, Mosh Bars. Mosh, which you may have heard about on Shark Tank, was founded by Maria Shriver and her son Patrick Schwarzenegger with a simple mission: to create a conversation about brain health through food, education, and research. Maria's father suffered from Alzheimer's, and since then, she and Patrick have dedicated themselves to finding ways to help other families dealing with this debilitating disease. Mosh joined forces with the world's top scientists and functional nutritionists to go beyond your average protein bar. With 8 delicious flavors, including a plant-based one in peanut butter and chocolate, each Mosh bar is made with ingredients that support brain health like ashwagandha, lion's mane, collagen, and omega-3s. And now Mosh Bars come with a new look and new formulation featuring a game-changing, brain-boosting ingredient you won't find in any other bar. Mosh is now the first and only food brand boosted with Cognizin, a premium nootropic that supplies the brain with a patented form of citicoline. But here's the best part: to make you feel good, Mosh donates a portion of all proceeds from your order to fund gender-based brain health research through the Women's Alzheimer's Movement. Why gender-based? 2/3 of all Alzheimer's patients are women. Mosh is working closely to close the gap between women and men's health research. So, one, look, turned 49 last week. Brain fog has been a thing. And a lot of weird things happen in perimenopause. You're like, I don't know. Is it brain fog from my estrogen or am I dying? So these bars to me are very, very helpful because I know it's my estrogen, but I still have brain fog and they help very much. Also, 2 of my grandparents had Alzheimer's before they passed away. So I have always been hyper aware of my brain and wanting to do the absolute best for my brain. Also, they're delicious. I love the blueberry flavor. They are tasty. They are good for on the go. Also, for my gut health, I have been told to be eating smaller meals throughout the day. And so these bars play a critical role in my post-hysteria snack time. If you want to find ways to give back to others and fuel your body and your brain, Mosh Bars are the perfect choice for you. Head to moshlife.com/hysteria to save 20% off plus free shipping on the bestsellers trial pack. That's 20% off plus free shipping on the bestsellers trial pack at moshlife.com/hysteria. Thank you, Mosh, for sponsoring this episode.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Now for a special interview with a farmer affected by the funding freeze. After this week's State of the Union, joint session, whatever you want to call it, I wanted to check in with someone whose story I'd been following. Back in January, when Trump began freezing federal grants and loans, he assured farmers that they would not be impacted. But of course, that was a lie. Farmers who received assistance from the Inflation Reduction Act were particularly harmed by the freeze. And here with me today, I have Elisa Lane, owner of the Two Boots Farm in Maryland, to tell her story. Welcome to Hysteria, Elisa.
Thank you.
Okay, so Elisa, you are a flower farm owner, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I actually grow flowers and fruit, so pawpaws.
Wow. I wish that I lived close to you so I could do your wreath-making workshop. Yes, I've been all over your website. And I actually grew up working on an anemone farm.
Oh, awesome.
So when I was following your story when you were in Washington protesting, it really struck me. So can you tell the listeners about how the past couple of months have impacted you and your farm?
For sure. The past few months have been really challenging for me and farmers across the country. Before this administration came in, I was awarded a grant to put solar on my farm. It was a USDA grant. And now I'm being told that those funds are frozen.
Oh, good grief. That is a tough one. So what improvements were you in the process of making to your farm?
So yeah, the USDA grant is under the Inflation Reduction Act, mm-hmm. And it is to install solar on our farm. So that we were awarded a grant for $30,000 from the USDA. So that's a contract that we have from the USDA. And because I received that contract, I went ahead and entered into a contract for $72,000 with a solar company to install solar at our farm. But now, and I've also contributed my own funds, thousands right. of dollars worth of my own funds for that. So here we are, and now the funds are frozen. Mm-hmm. I really think that this is a big issue. I am expected to be bound to my contract with my solar right. company, and therefore the USDA needs to uphold their contract with me and for farmers like me across the country.
So we've seen a lot on social media, on the news, saying that these things have been unfrozen. Is that not the case?
Right. They have unfroze some programs, but not across the board. So anything in that Inflation Reduction Act has not been unfrozen. While they say that they review, how it is under their executive order.
What do you wish more people who are listening today understood about USDA funding?
I wish that people understood that the reason that this funding exists in the first place is because our Congress and our government knows that farmers are struggling, that even before this freeze, we have been struggling to be profitable. And so the government released these funds to us in order to help us with infrastructure costs on our farms. So for me specifically, this is a solar project. Mm-hmm. And you can think about that as a climate mm-hmm. project. But I would argue that it's actually a financial benefit for us. If we get to save money on our electric usage, that brings down our production costs. And if that brings down our production costs, we get to, in turn, put that money back into our local economy and to pay our workers a better wage. So this is we really hope that the USDA will release these funds soon.
So it's interesting. So a release from the USDA, a press release from the USDA had said they wanted to, quote, Ensure its programs are focused on supporting farmers and ranchers, not DEIA programs or far-left climate programs. But aren't a lot of quote-unquote DEI and climate programs actually just straight-up beneficial to farmers?
Yeah, these programs are absolutely beneficial to farmers. Not only, you know, as I said, it's going to help me make my profitability bottom line, but also think about in the state of Maryland where I am, we currently import 40% of our energy from out of state. So 40% of that energy is coming into our state via fossil fuels. What if farmers like me were able to generate our own energy? That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. That means that it overall, it's going to cost everybody less money. So, and I really want people to understand that this problem is not just affecting farmers, but if farmers are getting screwed out of funds from the government, then we need to think about, do we need to take on that added debt as farmers, or do we have to close up our farms? Right. And this is a problem for consumers across the country who are relying on our goods.
So we here at Hysteria, we just like to help and we like to know what's going on. So one, I really hope you'll stay in touch and let us know. What is the current state of your funds right now?
Just frozen. Just frozen.
So weeks after, so for the past couple of weeks, we've been told they're not frozen. You are a real person who farms. Your funds are indeed still frozen. And so we hope you'll stay in touch and keep us posted on what is happening with your farm, with Two Boots. But also for our listeners in the Washington, D.C. area, where can they find your flowers and fruits? Are you at any local farmers markets or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm at the Baltimore Farmers Market on Sundays. So that's in Baltimore City. Okay. And that market starts in April. Okay. I sell my flowers across D.C. and Baltimore to florists. So some florists in the D.C. area are She Loves Me and Little Acre Flowers are two of the big ones that we sell.
I have actually sent flowers from Little Acre. So, perfect. Well, listen, you please keep in touch with us and we will link your website in our show notes so listeners know how to find you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Alisa, thank you so much for coming on today and good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be right back with Sani Petty. Hysteria is brought to you by Helix. Part of getting older, especially if you're a woman, I don't know if it happens to men because I'm not one, my sleep is terrible. I have terrible, terrible sleep. I'm hot. I get so hot when I sleep. Sometimes you just need to keep extra pillows so that you can swap your hot, sticky pillow out when you wake up in the middle of the night so you have any chance of going back to sleep. Not only that, but I've developed some sort of acid reflux thing, which requires me to sleep with my head lifted up so that I can actually, fall asleep. But the funny thing about it is my Helix bed helps with all of those things. So many things. Because the problem was when I was propping myself up on my old bed so that I didn't have acid reflux, I was getting all sorts of shoulder problems. Not so anymore. Nope, not with my Helix mattress. We got our Helix mattress to solve a bunch of issues, and most of them are solved. And I really couldn't be happier. My sleep is so much better. The quality of the products is so good. My pillows keep my head supported but don't give me like cramps in my neck. And the Midnight Lux Helix is so wonderful because it's not too firm, but it's not too soft. So it's perfect. You know who loves it? The cats. The cats love it because we have a new sleep routine where we try to wind down at 8 o'clock and we get in bed and we watch The West Wing on our iPad, all of us together on the Helix, cozy like Snugs bugs in a rugs. And one other thing that's great, I don't snore that much anymore. My husband, who is a king, never really told me that I was a snorer, but I guess it got kind of bad a while back and he'd be like, you know, you snore, but really not snoring as badly anymore. It's not gone, but progress is all that we can hope for. So go to helixsleep.com/hysteria for 20% off site-wide. That's helixsleep.com/hysteria for 20% off site-wide. helixsleep.com/hysteria.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast for women who have nothing left to say this week. Sammy, but first...
So I'm not going to say anything.
No. First, some announcements for the class. Two great episodes just dropped recently from the Crooked Network. First up, the Oscars were on Sunday, so you know Keep It hosts Lewis and Ira are taking their gum out, throwing it at Georgina Chapman, and rushing to the mic for some hot takes. Plus, they're joined by Prindle Queen herself, Brenda Song. Catch their full recap of Hollywood's biggest night and an interview you don't want to miss on the Keep It feed or YouTube. Trump's honeymoon is over, trust in the media is at a low, and the price of eggs are the latest distraction. Dan Pfeiffer breaks it all down on the latest episode of Polar Coaster, plus what's really behind the Fort Knox gold conspiracy. Our very own producer, Caroline Reston, moderates. To get access to this exclusive subscriber series, subscribe at crooked.com/friends now. Now, let's get to Sanny Petty. Okay, Sammy. Are you feeling Sanny? Are you feeling Petty? Are you feeling a little bit of both? What's on your mind?
A wintry mix of both.
Okay.
I have two Petties and one Sanny. So I guess, you know, but one of the Petties I think you'll be right on board with, which is J.D. Vance going skiing and the reception he received in Vermont.
Yes, ma'am. And I have a little tag along to that. So please go ahead.
Okay, good, good. It was refreshing to me to see the whole town of Sugarbrush, Vermont come out with signs. Again, creativity. A plus for creativity and A plus for effort. Because not every day do you get a shitty vice president to come visit your East Coast ski resort and you get the chance to troll him at every turn. Like, I don't think that he got through – did he get through any – based on
what
it seemed like online, like, he didn't have a minute of peace. Like, Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the Red Hen for 8 hours straight. And I appreciate that.
What was he thinking? Sammy, if he wanted to go skiing, by all means.
He should have gone to Wyoming.
Go skiing. Why did you pick Vermont? Home of Senator Bernie Sanders. Home
and not even that good snow.
No, the powder's not been great. But, like, to say, you know what, team? I think we're going to go to Vermont this weekend. But to add to that story, a little local hero, Lucy Welch. Lucy Welch is in charge of sending out her daily report about powder and conditions on the mountain. Okay.
Oh, I saw this.
Yes, everyone listens to Lucy. She's the Sugarbush snow reporter. And you know what? She had some things to say in her snow report. And she knew she might face consequences, but I'm just going to do a real quick little dramatic reading, a snippet from what she said. Quote, this fresh forest air is more specifically fresh national forest air. Sugarbush operates on 1,745 acres of the Green Mountain National Forest. Right now, national forest lands and national parks are under direct attack by the current administration, who is swiftly terminating the positions of dedicated employees who devote their lives to protecting the land we love and to protecting us while we are enjoying that land. Burlington, Vermont is one of the fastest warming cities in the country, and Vermont is the 9th fastest warming state. She's had several paragraphs, which were incredibly charming, and It was very long, but she said her piece. And you know what? It's a little form of resistance. And you know what? Good for her. And I hope we will be keeping our eyes on her to make sure nothing bad happens to Lucy Welch.
This is what I mean: creativity. Just take your shot when the chance comes.
Are you like Lin-Manuel right now? Like, you got to shoot your shot.
Not throwing away my shot.
Not throwing away shot.
I didn't mean to, but. Just like my country, I'm young, scrappy, and hungry. I'm not throwing away my shot. That's the, like, the only words to the whole of Hamilton that I actually know. So that worked out.
What else were you feeling Sandy about, or petty?
Petty about Adrian Brody's Oscar speech.
What was his speech? I didn't listen.
It was like 6 minutes of self-aggrandizement and talking about how he has struggled so hard. Oh, right before he went on stage, he turns and he threw his gum back at his wife to catch. She caught it. Right. Like, keep that.
That's when you swallow your gum.
Or put it in the side of your, figure it out. Like,
put it in your pocket.
Whatever. Like, I don't care. So he starts getting played off, like, with the music in the middle at, like, 3 minutes, 30 seconds-ish. And he's like, I've been here before. This ain't my first rodeo. Turn that off. And they still let him keep going for another 3 or so minutes. And I just think that we need to put this man back in the box for as many years as it's been since he last won his Oscar. Oh, and Caroline is texting us that his girlfriend slash wife is
Georgina
Harvey
Chapman.
Weinstein's ex-wife, Georgina
yes.
Chapman.
Yes.
Also the founder of Marquesa.
Yes.
So, yeah, she takes shit that maybe she should think about. I feel like if my husband ever fucking threw his gum at me,
ever. In what universe?
In any situation, let alone
it would
on
never
a nationally
happen.
Televised broadcast. Yeah, that's disgusting. He would just swallow it. Like,
just swallow it, okay? It'll take 7 years to digest, but it's the one time you're doing it, so just stop.
Yeah, wait 7 more years. So I was unhappy with that, and I think everyone who didn't see the speech should know how bad it was and how uncomfortable it was and how, if it were anyone but a white man, they would have been played off.
Oh, played off and, you know, embarrassed. Like, they would have been a story.
They would have never, yes, it would have been a story and they would have never done it.
No.
He was also, like, thinking people to thank and he, like, doesn't, he, then he's like, oh, the guy that the Brutalist is based off of.
Oh, thank you.
Like, oh, thanks. Thanks to you too. Thanks God. Like,
that's, yeah. Okay. You know what that is? I can't believe I missed that. Yes, I can, because I fell asleep at like 9:30.
I also didn't watch it. I watched a clip of it after. People were like, I saw a few comments about how painful it was, but not enough.
So you had to watch
and
the whole thing.
So I was like, okay, I need to watch. You know, you don't need to make the speech as long as the movie, sir.
Well, it was like when you and I were talking last Friday night about how bad the Zelensky-Trump meeting in the Oval Office was, and I couldn't take people's words for it, and I watched all 49 minutes. I'll never get that back.
It's good that you digested that piece of history.
Well, yeah, I did. All right. But I'm feeling I have a Sanny.
Okay.
And it is, if I pass on just a little bit of peace to people, that's all I'm here for today.
Okay.
Kate Hudson has a new show on Netflix.
Yeah.
Called Running Point, I think it's called.
Yeah.
It is a fucking delight.
Oh, it is.
It is a delight. It is everything you need in a television show right now. Like, look, we're loving White Lotus, right? But White Lotus is a little stressful. It's a little dark. You never know exactly what's going to happen, right?
It's also like extremely pleasurable homework for me.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
By the way, we are recapping
yes,
the White Lotus.
Yes, next week.
Next Monday.
Yes.
So everyone, it's going to be out on Monday. Get ready for it on App Batches.
We are going to recap, but the Kate Hudson show is just charming. She ends up taking over her family's basketball team. She is a basketball team owner, and it marries all of the best. You know, it's got like, there's a little Penny Lane from Almost Famous. There's a little Andy Anderson from How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. I sat there, it was one of those shows, I was like, oh my God, I already got to episode 3, I need to stop this right now or it's going to go by too fast. Because I just thought it's funny, it's not stupid, it's not mindless, you know, it's like, it's a totally enjoyable show with like a little bit of fashion, which was nice.
Okay, I love that. I love that. Yeah. When Netflix hits like a glossy girl show.
Yeah, and I found it because I had to detox from another show I had watched, which was very good, but very dark.
Was it Zero Day?
It was.
I know.
Did you watch Zero Day?
I watched the first 3 episodes and then I got distracted And
it's really good, but in the year of our Lord 2025, I needed to space out the episodes.
Yeah. Well, what I got distracted by was my Sanny. And I actually told you about my Sanny. I was reading a book this weekend that
Which
took
I ordered.
Me out of the world. Oh, you did?
I have it. Yes, I have it.
Okay. So this took me out of
Tell
the world.
Tell listeners the name of the book because the you recommend
name
it
is
so highly.
A Season in Purgatory by Dominic Dunn. It's not a new book. I think
right.
old
Doesn't
books
matter.
Are. Yeah. And basically Dominic Dunn is, he was like a journalist, novelist, and he did like crime stories. And they were always like based on true stories and things mm-hmm. kind of like that Ryan Murphy would turn into shows. So this book is based on the Kennedy family, particularly a real life convicted and overturned murder
right.
by RFK's cousin, Michael Skakel,
yeah.
which happened in the 80s. And it's the book is based on, it's not like 100, you know, it's not totally faithful to that story, but it kind of combines the Kennedy personas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so good. It's like one of those that like burrows into your brain. I think Dominic Dunn's books tend to do that
yeah, yeah,
in general. The Two Mrs. Grenvilles, also amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I highly recommend it if you want to like escape, but also feel like if you don't feel like you can fully leave the world of the news.
Right.
And, you know, this is in it, but adjacent, but also not stressful.
Yes, it's perfect.
And genuinely enjoyable.
You
so I recommend
sold
it
to me so hard. I actually got it last night. It came in the mail.
You know, it sells itself.
Well,
I just told you what
well.
It's about.
I know. So I'm excited. All right, so we're going to read a book. We're going to watch Kate Hudson own a basketball team. And unfortunately, that's all for today. Thank you, Sammy, for guest hosting. And thank you, Elisa Lane from Two Boots Farm for joining as well. And listeners, we'll be back next week with an all-new episode. Have a great week.
Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusives like This Fucking Guy, our video series. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. And thank you to Daisy Cruz, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.